All right, folks, let's go. I'm going to call to order this meeting of the Little Calumet River Basin Development Commission for Thursday, June 20th, 2024. Please set your phones on stun and let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Lambert, nice to see you. Will you please call roll?
Present.
Tom Vesey.
Present.
Andrew Brodnick.
Present. Here.
Dave Chassamano. Absent. Ron Ware.
Here.
Robert Casey.
Here.
Lamont Whitaker.
Present.
William Baker.
Present. We have a quorum. Moving right along. Next up is the approval of minutes for May 15th, 2024. We need a motion to have a conversation.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we approve the minutes from May 15th, 2024 as presented.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Either none, Mrs. Lambert. Mr. Wicklund, when did we stop doing it like this? Never. Great. Mrs. Lambert.
Yes.
Yes.
Anthony Brodnick.
Abstain.
Derek Nimitz.
Yes.
Ron Ware?
Yes.
Yes.
Levon
Whitaker?
Yes.
William Baker?
Yes. Next up is the chairman's report. That's me. Thank you all for coming out. Summertime, isn't it great when it's 95 degrees? We're here, so we make sure a $275 million man-made flood control project does what it's supposed to do and doesn't create a situation like we see on those pictures over there from September 2008. Which is an example of what happens when you don't try to maintain a system that was designed to control Mother Nature, which is a challenge in and of itself. So if we get 10 gallons of water from Mother Nature for our 5-gallon bucket, we're going to have some issues. But we are far better prepared today than we were prior to the events of September in 2008. So as we move along and get ready to close out this project and get to the next phases of what happened with the watershed, I look forward to the community continuing to work together to make sure something like that is something only history knows about. Moving right along, next up is the finance report. We need the approval of the claims for June 2024 to have a conversation, gentlemen.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve the claims for June of 2024 in the amount of $606,527.04.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
And we have a second. Some discussion, Mr. Repe.
Not sure that
thank you. As normal, we'll go through some of the higher valued claims, and then if there's questions, I would be happy to answer them. Largest claim for FH Passion for the watershed project known as the Katie March Screen Raker. That is the one where it was designed and built some time ago, probably around 2010. Never did properly work properly for the town of Griffith.
Who designed that, by the way?
Not us.
Okay.
And trying to be peaceful on a Thursday. And so it was redesigned for the actually to have electronic trash rakers like it should have been as opposed to the manual ones. This is a payment for $234,200. There will be some more claims due on this one. It is complete and functional. However, the Army Corps has yet to inspect it. Their inspection is set for July to do that. And once that happens, I think you'll see all the other claims come through and the retainage release so long as it passes what it's supposed to. There has been two mowings cycles going on so far. We're probably actually due for a third because of the humid and wet conditions that we've had. And now we've got 90 degree temperatures. So I'm sure this is gonna be growing quite well. Those for $27,500 apiece for CNH mowing. Christopher Burke Engineering for the Deepwater Watershed that we're gonna see and learn about later on in this meeting. That's for $18,450. Great Lakes Electrical Maintenance, that's our pump station inspections. And then we have a Lake County Parks, $74,638, which is a reimbursement for the Conservation Collaborative that we, they did a presentation in April. They'll have another request coming up in our July meeting for additional fundings for the continuation of not only this one, but also in addition to other projects that they may have that they identified for our during the presentation. So with that, I'd be happy to entertain questions on anything else.
Gentlemen, any questions for Mr. Rippey on the claims?
Vasquez development closeout, is that for Monday?
That's correct. They're doing live streaming. They did a sort of history board. We provided them all things. I've seen the preview of it. It's pretty neat for what they accomplished in 2 weeks.
And who maintains the record?
The town of Griffith does. So there's five components or five screens, three of which have the raker on them, two of them are done manually, and they rake into a bin. The bin gets taken out. There's a backup electric generator just in case. That's important because it pulls off the pressure not only off of Hart's Ditch, but also south of Ridge Road, in all the way to Grant Street, basically unincorporated, or the south part of Gary and Maryville. All that water feeds through that section.
Okay. And then second question, United Consulting, which parking lot and trail maintenance are this?
Yeah. So there's three parking lots that Derek is being very patient waiting to be paved for the over mitigation. So they're drawing the specs up. We try to do it in-house, and I did do a great job. So they're doing it. And then the sealant for the trails that we have up on the river currently. So if you're in Hammond, it's between Columbia and the Boulevard. If you're in Highland, it's from Kennedy to Klein on the south side. And then Gary is basically what I would consider Gary South. So that's everything from Chase Street to Martin Luther King. Because it's when we were guessing at the amount, what this is going to cost, we were going to do Gary North. We may do Gary North next year, but that's a segment that we just decided to do. Gary South is the smallest segment. And the oldest segment that has been paved, we paved probably in 2014, the north segment, which was beyond what the Corps required us to do.
So back to the raker and Katie Marsh, is that,
didn't you hear the beginning?
Katie Marsh screen raker, is that asset a town asset or is that owned by the system?
It was a separate federal project turned over to the city of, or the town of Griffith.
Okay. So they turned it over to the town. So that's not, so it's almost like a pump station.
Correct.
All right. So does it get inspected by the Corps as a part of the annual inspection? So there should be some paper as far as the maintenance, similar to how we have pump stations and have that paper, just so there's a trail for folks to go and look at to make sure that work's being done.
Correct. Just like when we pay them as part of an agreement, $50,000, because there was no maintenance fee to keep, to upkeep their part of the project.
Okay.
So same principle.
But that's in place and we're working on that?
No, it's already in place.
Okay. Well, thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Rippey regarding the claims?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Question for you regarding the raker and the maintenance program. If it's turned over to the city, what's our involvement going forward with that?
My opinion is that in so much as it's something that's inspected by the Army Corps of Engineers every year as a part of the system as a whole, we should have some involvement in it. At least to be able to track that maintenance, because they're going to go in and take a look at it. I know it's going to be getting taken care of because it's a big part of the system, but at least to have the paper trail correct.
I know we pay them for maintenance along the Katie Marsh Ditch every year.
Mm-hmm.
Should that just be one of on the checklist things they have to get done?
We'll probably amend that agreement that we have existing and include this now with that.
Since
it's new, because it wasn't before. All it was. We're simply four individuals that have to take large rakes and try to rake the stuff out.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Gazdecki.
Yes. Dan, HWC Engineering has a bank stabilization and boat ramp project.
Yep.
It's been in the works for quite a while. It seems like, is there any progress on that?
We expedited it just recently with the inspection, because what HWC was going to do was do borings into the levee. After the Corps did the last inspection in May, beginning of May, late April, they then decided we don't need those borings because they looked at it, their head of the 408, which is, what's his name? I thought I lost track of it. Kyle looked at it and goes, well, I don't need borings anymore because all it is really the toe of the levee that's eroding, and I'd rather get it taken care of sooner than later. The only place that they'll need borings is for the ramp that is set for the area just to the east of Kennedy Avenue, where that's a ramp that was requested by the town of Highland for emergency purposes. But yes, the answer is it has been going on for a while, but now that the Corps has looked at it, boots on the ground, they have now determined they don't need as much information as what they initially requested.
Thank you.
All right, any other questions on the claims? If there are none, we have a motion and a second. This is Lambert.
Yes.
Yes.
Anthony Brodnick.
Yes.
Derek. Yes.
Ware.
Yes.
Robert Hochi.
Yes.
Yes. All right, moving right along, paying the bills. Mr. Repay, next up, Executive Director's report. What's going on in the field, please?
I just want to continue actually on that point that Tom brought up about how long things take and the 408s, and it's deal with Sandbar. We're trying to schedule another meeting out in the field.
Sandbar where, for folks that don't know?
Out off of Kennedy Avenue with the built-up sediment over from Hart's Ditch. So we had an initial meeting out there. There was consensus as to how we were going to go, but as a part of the 408 process, there is multiple divisions within the Corps that have to sign off on the permit. And so we've gotten to the point now, and I will tell you, there has been a lot of great communication back and forth, but there's been constant questions, and every time we send an email, we get three more questions coming back. But so now we're trying to get them just to sit down, and it's almost humorous, but it is.
It is. Well, yeah. You have to laugh. This is the movie we've been watching for 40 years.
So what we're trying to do is get the different divisions that have the questions that haven't necessarily been out there to go out there and see what we're talking about. There's going to be no additional sediment put into the river. We are probably taking more out than we know we're taking more out than we are putting in or leveling out or putting against the levee itself. So it's we're trying to schedule that here next week to get the folks from environmental. We think the hydrology folks are on board with us. Initially, they thought we were putting more sediment back into the river. So sometimes it's better to see it firsthand than to try to describe it to some folks. So,
is it even possible to get all of the players from that side of the table into the room at one time?
No.
Because why would you want to do that?
Right? I mean, it's a wish. It'd be great. But realistically, just the amount of projects that they undertake and working from different locations.
How about Zoom or Teams?
I'm going to show them that they have to be out. Like, we see people out there and they're one by one or two by two. They each have questions. And I'm not here to blame them, but I'm just saying we're trying to get them the division that is mainly hydrology, we think is taken care of. And then the environmental is the second part. And we think we can still do this year. And that's what I told them that we're going to do this year. So
right now, Dan.
All right.
Can we bid that, Dan, prior?
I'm sorry?
Is it possible to bid it before we get this?
You couldn't bid it because you wouldn't know what the Corps is going to end up finally settling on. They may say, we want to take more cubic yards out of the river.
Were you anticipating trucking material out or trying to keep it there and just redistribute it? Keep it there.
Besides the vegetation, we would just take everything and redistribute it.
Right. In on that, right?
Right. Pretty straightforward.
Right. Well, and the expense would be huge on trucks. I think that would be, not a good green footprint.
No. So it's still going, and we're still going to try to get them to understand what we're all up here. So wanted to finish that point. Maya Energy did not pay the dues or their lease on the first, but since the first fell on a Saturday, by our agreement, they had till the third. They did not. Our attorney sent them a letter telling them that they were delinquent. And so now we wait. But this is
the contract, I thought, had a certain amount of time before they're in pure default.
Is it 60 days? Mm-hmm. So they've got 60 days from the third to be considered compliant.
To have a couple of car washes. Okay.
Right. So just so everyone is aware of that, PLC replacement, I had spoken about them being a little bit delayed with the parts for Grant East and Grant West, and Marshalltown we're going to deal with here later on. A lot of rain last month, a lot of maintenance, a lot of grass growing, trying to keep up with that. We talked about the Griffith Raker, Sarman Woods.
I'm sorry, yes, any sir. Challenges with all that rain we had? Where was points of concern?
I mean, there was
only, that we had plenty of capacity.
Yeah, the only one thing that we dealt with was that one rain about 2 weeks ago where it was about 3 inches of rain. It ranged from 2.5 to 3.5, roughly, in a big swath. No capacity issues, just caused our pump stations to, go a little bit bonkers.
Fire up.
Yeah, so we went out, we checked on them. It was about 3:30 in the morning. That was a fun one, but they're all working, everything functioning right. Water, of course, stayed in the streets for a little while, but no issues, plenty of capacity. Let's see. Inspections, we only had two left. NDOT, which was canceled from May, and then the Griffith Katie March, which is going to be a part of that Raker, but that's going to be in July. They've moved the date around a couple times, but I think they settled on the 25th of July. I believe that was the final date. So we'll hope that still holds so we can get these done. Parts Ditch, the stabilization work, still going well between 45th and Franlin. A couple of questions from some residents, but overall going smoothly. And so long as we stay away from the rain, they're able to do a lot of work inside that inside the ditch. Working with Wolverine Pipeline to repair some of their issues we have talked about last year. They're still looking to do that work in August. They have, I believe, four locations where they need to do that work, mainly between Grant Street and Klein Avenue. So we're working to coordinate that with them as far as access our property. And as well as we're still meeting regarding the Malcolm X drainage improvement at the corner there that we spoke about with the corner that always tends to flood. We've got some ideas and we still need to talk to the city about some of our thoughts on how to necessarily improve that. And then finally, we're starting to get the inspection reports back in Hammond and Munster, and there's been some encroachments. So we're going to have to write some more serious letters to some folks.
The Corps has a couple of templates for you.
So telling them basically they still have to stay back 15 feet from the toe. It seems like since the project's been done, they sort of slowly, incrementally got themselves fences and gardens and
shocking
stuff. So we have to write them to remind them. Other than that, I think that covers almost everything.
All right, gentlemen, back to the commissioners. Any questions for Mr. Repe as it relates to what's going on in the field?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, Andrew.
Just a quick one on the Superior proposal for the PLCs. On the first page, there's something that says the Grant West pump station design will be adapted to meet the requirements of the Marshalltown pump station. But I don't see anything in the scope for Grant West. What's that about? Do you know what that is?
That may be a misprint on their part. I didn't catch that one, but Grant West has nothing to do with Marshalltown.
Right.
Maybe they were probably just trying to compare, or maybe they did a copy and paste and they forgot to remove that. But this proposal is strictly related to Marshalltown. Grant West, Grant East.
No,
those are under the first agreement that we signed with them, along with Burr North. That's a good catch,
Mr. Wyszynski.
Are we two mowings ahead or one plus from last year?
We had six last year.
Right.
We may surpass that this year.
Okay.
We're probably going to do a third mowing, I would say, within the next week or so.
So that'll be the third one.
It'll be the third one.
Okay.
It just... And by the way, ticks are bad out there, just for the record.
Thanks.
Hey, Sam, I'm sure Derek knows that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right, any other questions for Mr. Repe? Either or not. All right, do the lead into the show.
Sure. You have CMS here and Peggy Shepherd, who's not showing herself, and that's okay. I'm not a big fan of doing that else on Zoom. Given the presentation on the Deep River Watershed modeling that had started, that we had started for, I think it's been almost 9 months now, maybe a little bit longer. Basically looking at problems and opportunities that exist not only on Deep River, also the confluence with the locale, and also Beaver Dam Ditch, which is the main tributary for Prop 1, Winfield, and also Turkey Creek, which is you know, the major tributary for Merrillville, Cherrillville. So with that, you know.
And just some additional context for the public is that Deep River is one of two primary tributaries into the locale along with Hart Waterway, not Hart Ditch. So it's Deep River and the Hart. Those are the two. This is a study now of the Deep River tributary, basically for where it starts in our watershed all the way to the river. Is that correct, Dan?
That's correct. I'm giving you the hard copy in case you didn't ask.
Thank you.
So with that, Siavash, go right ahead.
Hey, Siavash, state your name and address for the public record, please, sir.
Sure. Name is Siavash Baik with Christopher Burke Engineer. I'm a vice president and principal engineer for Burke LLC in Indianapolis. And with me here is Peggy Shepherd. Peggy is the main modeler and engineer who has done all this work, which we are presenting today. Obviously, she has been deeply involved with this for the last year, so all the difficult questions are on her. In any rate, it's a pleasure to be here, at least virtually, to present to you what we have done over the last year. So just a summary of this work. Let me just start presentation that one. We have, during our work, during the work, something to what was the motivation of this project to begin with. And we had been working with the commission for previous studies, the hydraulic modeling studies. And during those modelings, we noticed some rather large areas of significant flood vulnerability along the Deep River upstream of Little Cal in the lake station in particular, which was kind of a larger than what we have is depicted in the flood insurance studies. And one of the things we said, okay, well, it's obviously this area that is subject to flooding could be impacted, but by projects that go on within the watershed, either positively or negatively for that matter. And and looking at the commission's availability of the models that are there in the watershed, we see that there was a lack of some comprehensive, consistent, or what we call integrated modeling, something that we could evaluate projects and so that we can measure that impact or understand the impact regionally at least. So that project, basically, that led to working on this project of the entire watershed, which I will explain. But our goal basically saying that, are we able to evaluate future projects or even past projects in a way that we can basically put the projects that you fund or you are involved with into three buckets. The first bucket is the positive, regional impact. It was a project that we are looking at as a, overall impact. And it's not necessarily the local aspects, because I'm sure all the projects that are undertaken have some positive impacts or there are reasons for this project. But we are looking at regionally, is that a regional impact? And what with that we mean hydraulic impacts, such as lower flood stages or lower peak flows, lower velocities. That would be a positive impact. Or the project may be in a second bucket, I call it just a negligible, it's not really detrimental or positive impact regionally again. And the third bucket is that project that we really need to be careful of, is that the project that could be some local benefits, but regionally it may increase elevations, velocities, or discharges that could be impacting some existing areas, perhaps. So with that, we to accomplish this, we had this a few project components we were trying to do. First, evaluating adequacy of available modeling for use in the overall model that we were developing, creating and calibrating a watershed-wide hydrologic model, and the hydrologic models are the ones that try to estimate the flow based on the rainfall which is falling on the watershed. And then creating and developing an integrated, updated hydraulic model for selected major streams in the watershed. And I will go over those names, the streams there. And once we do that one, we wanted to develop this models into our standard 10-year and 100-year, what we call existing conditions, so that they're a base for evaluating things for this kind of a medium and large flood levels. Of course, the developing a documentation, a project report, detailed documentation of the modeling and what how they can be it can be used. We also wanted to create a guidance for future use of the model in case we are not doing or somebody else can pick it up and actually look at this model. So the guide to do that one exactly step by step how you evaluate a project. And then finally, we had a few projects that was suggested as to test to see if we can see the impacts of those, some past projects and a couple of future projects. So I'm going to go over each one of these just to briefly to get you. The first thing we were going to do was we didn't want to basically start repeating something which was done before. So we look at all available modeling, which was available for what we wanted. And so we evaluated those available modeling data to select the usable elements so that we can use it in that integrated unsteady state model. And when I said unsteady state, we're talking about the hydraulic model that takes into account both the traveling of the peak flows, but also it takes into account the storage within the floodplain and also can simulate the timing. This type of projects is, this type of modeling is suitable for evaluating projects because it takes into account more factors than what you see in the FIS flood insurance study models, which are steady state modeling. So we wanted to have this, all this stream to be in that, basically integrated with that kind of modeling. There are a few studies that we had, SEH had done a good on a steady state hydraulic model of the Burns Harbor, upstream of Lake George. And so we used the bathymetric data from that one, bridge survey data, and we combined that with more recent topographic data on the overbanks outside the channel, as well as, of course, the updated flows that we will do through our, come up with the hydrologic modeling, which we did. Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, Chicago, had some large model of entire watershed. However, unfortunately, that model, was unsteady model, but it was not refined enough for us to do. It was very large subbasins and large, and the data was also somewhat old, and those data didn't reflect exactly. We use FIS models, flood insurance models, and evaluate those and find out that many bridges didn't match current flood events or configuration sizes. And so, but we used to steal the data we could from them. Lawson Fisher had done in the study is a very short reach of Lake George outlet. We used that in our study. And finally, IDNR had some other studies from Burns Ditch that included Burn Ditch, but was a steady state, had some useful data. We took those. We put it all together in terms of hydrologic model, again, the model that gets rainfall into flow values that we could use in the hydraulic model. We had about 186 square miles of watershed that we included in this one here. You can see that we had the sub-basin water, small watershed refined enough, about 5 square miles each, so that we can look at impact of the projects in there. You can notice on the top left corner of your screen, more or less, that we, for the Little Cal and Heart Ditch and all those areas are not combined. We use the input data basically from the gauges and measurements for now. In the future, once we have another project underway for all that watershed in terms of both hydrology and hydraulics, and once we have that done, that can be attached to this instead of this gauge. But for now, so that we have the major portion model, we have that as an input. And same thing for the east branch of Little Cap. But overall, we have 186 square miles watershed broken down into 5 square mile sub watersheds, updated land use, updated soils, topography, rainfall data to come up with this comprehensive hydrologic model of this watershed. Then we had the hydraulic model, created this unsteady state model that used the bathymetry and survey data from previous models and newer digital elevation models. And whatever models that better information was available have been used in this, updated bridge information, dam geometry, topography, roughness values, the inflows that we generated from those hydrologic models at different locations, and other data, the details. Altogether, we have 54 miles of stream, the entire Burns Ditch, Little Cal, some portions of Little Cal, Deep River, and you can see on the screen as the mileage each one of those things, and 9 miles of Burns Ditch, about half a mile, that small step of the Little Cal with that input coming in, 28 miles of Deep River, about 4 miles of Duck Creek, 6.5 miles of Turkey Creek, and the all entire length of 6 miles of main Beaver Dam Ditch. So all this data is corrected there. There are about over 90 bridges or culverts are included in the model, to inline weirs, offline storage facilities along the thing. And so both hydrologic model and this model were calibrated to two major floods, 2008 flood and 2019, where we had good data. And so by calibration, we mean we changed the parameters so that we are sure that for those flood events that historically happened, we are close in terms of the results. The hydrograph that is generated from the hydrologic report or the elevations that we see. And so that model calibrated, and so we have this model now, which we then turn into a what we call an existing condition model. So this existing condition model is the same model that we had, and we used the calibrated, but now has all the updates, plus it is simulating the 10-year and 100-year rainfall distributions, that so that we can have some medium events, moderate event, I would call it, and a larger events. So this will become the base for evaluating future projects, and also of course it generates up-to-date information right now. There was a next component was to document the results. We have a very detailed model, report that talks about all the assumptions, all the data to be there, so that we could be used, and we know where what went into the report. We also this report, which is right now, I think, is the internal QC done. Report is done, but we're just reviewing it and for publishing it. Also included guidance for future use of the modeling, and also a few simulation to see how this model would work. We were looking for how this modeling can be used and summarized for the use of commission in your determination of see, you know, what the regional impact of the project is. So we look in different ways. What we came up with this, finally came up with this summarization. I realize you may not be able to read everything, but I will go to examples and show that. But basically what we have, you know, a particular project, we have a project information, then a tab in there, and then we have a, you know, tab that has all the cross-sectional data for both existing condition model, the base model, and what the new simulation of whatever project we are looking at. So we have those cross-sections, hundreds of cross-sections. That's not easy to compare for someone. For what we have is now that data is extracted into a summary table, which you see here, and that's a portion of that summary table. But that portion of summary table basically had reaches, stream reaches of importance to us. So it says from here to here, and you see a map on the left that shows those reaches in there. And then the conclusion of that is another tab, which we'll talk about. So overall, how does the water surface, you know, elevations either increase, decrease, or, you know, how does the velocities or discharge change? So just to test this and to also, as part of our work, we looked at a few projects. This first one was the all the most recent projects, major projects that were done from 2019 to now, so the last 5 years. Major projects was impact of Lake Station Dam removal and replacement with that riffle. You know, the railroad of Lake, you know, the downstream of Lake George, that railroad opening, replacing the Third Street over the Lake George. And so when we look at that, we simulate that modeling, we can see that, and first of all, we're showing the location of those, and on your right-hand side, you can see those stars, there's location of that. We look at those, the results. As you see, we have a major reduction in water surface elevations up to 1.1 foot in just reaches immediately upstream of these areas, reaches 8, 9, 10. Basically a very positive project. So that goes to my check mark on that bucket. However, like every other project, sometimes there are also other, could be also increases in elevation. And here, because we have opening up, of course, the creek water may go down faster. And so in some reach downstream, you have some increase in water surface elevations, small, 0.2 feet only or 0.1 foot. So those coupled, so there is mostly positive, but there are some negative, and those negatives may be tolerable. In this case, there may be a reach that it's done, but we want rather know that before we even look at the project. But, you know, is that tolerable? Is that okay? Is in the location, doesn't have any building, and does it, and you know, dissipates downstream, which in the case did as well. So that's how we, an example of how those projects could be looked at. Stinky Creek diversion project has been discussed in this commission for some time. And we always wondering, what is the regional impact of this project? We know there has some positive impacts locally. So when we put it in this big model that has all these reaches and integrated everything and on a steady state model, now for sure we know that as to the level of accuracy, we can say that the impacts are really negligible in terms of either, you know, elevation decreases overall in along the deep river or along the stream downstream of the project site, negligible water surface peak elevation increases also, so it is not detrimental either. No major change in either velocity or discharge. So that's how we say, okay, well, it was a neutral type of project and it's probably locally good, but at least we know that the impact downstream. Now, these were the two projects that, or with another one, which was in our scope, but we had a time and we had a budget left, and then we still do. Asked Mr. Vipay, so there were other things that you wanted to look at. So there are a few of them that will be in the report. So I'm not sure if I want to go through all of them, but there were some, you know, either ideas or it could be, you know, a project. The last one I kind of interested in just sharing that with you. You know, Piggy was just looking at, you know, just, you know, Beaver Dam ditch river and stream, and that one has a rather large floodplain area. I will show the next slide. And so we're saying, what happens if we are, you know, those floodplain storage areas are somehow failed, developed, levied off, whatever that is, would there be an impact to the downstream? So again, the project we're looking at is just here off the left, and on Beaver Dam Ditch. And so when we did that simulation, we're finding that you may then have up to 5 foot increase in the upstream end of the Beaver Dam Ditch, which goes down for a while. So definitely a major impact downstream. Not that anybody has suggested that, but that really highlights the importance of the flood storage, which is available right now along the stream. So this is a depiction of the, of course, at this scale is difficult to see, but everything you see in the magenta color is the floodplains for the 100-year condition. And so you can see that Deep River project, of course, Beaver Dam Ditch floodplain that we're talking about, but at the start next to it, that storage was basically taken away. We all saw what the impact was. But that's true with all the floodplain storage and all the wetland storage in the watershed. Those are existing natural infrastructure, as you know. We didn't pay for it, but it's available to us. And oftentimes we have been saying that, you know, we watch those floodplains because once we lose them, then we have to compensate for them with the expensive man-made flood storage. And of course, so that goes just a tangent to our study that preservation of those existing floodplain storage is crucial, whatever we can do. Some additional considerations to share with you. What my last slide. The one is that this current tool only evaluates the hydraulic impacts. You are not, you know, impact of sediment supply, erosion, or recreational, etc. So you have some projects done in the watershed that their goal is to reduce the sediment, as an example. You know, we are not evaluating, we only evaluating the hydraulic impact. And just because there's no regional impact of the project or you know, no regional benefit of the project, it doesn't mean that the project does not have a localized benefit. We're just looking at the big picture of those major streams. We have this updates definitely is a better data, more up-to-date data, both at the risk areas and the hydraulic and modeling in terms of elevations, but it's not intended to be to replace the regulatory model. The regulatory models, which are in effect, has certain conditions to them. For instance, you know, storage behind the flood that's stored behind the culverts or bridges are not to be counted because they cannot be guaranteed that they stay there, or some other things. So we are not just a better data for us to be able to evaluate projects. Some potential use of for other objectives, which was not focus of our current study. We have now, you know, we can map the current flood risk areas in a better, more accurate way, and that could be helping the flood response because we have a better, you know, we have a timing, you know, we have how long it takes for a peak flow from there to here, and some other more data that we can answer. And so that could be useful for planning purposes, for flood response purposes. And then also with the tool in the future, if, you know, as a separate, you know, event, we could look at, are there projects that could reduce some of these risks that we see, for instance, the lake station, some what if scenarios to look for in that area and other ones. So this could be a good use of this model in the future. There need to be a periodic updates of this model. Of course, the things that may trigger that could be a better topographic information become available for a bridge or a stream breach, maybe bridge replacement or structures thing, maybe a new diversion or something comes in. So And also when we have a better model from Little Cal, we will integrate that into this model, but it's just every few years that need to be updated so that it's always effective and a good base model. And so I summarized all those things into this. Hopefully it made sense what we do, but we are absolutely open to questions you might have.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Dan, can you close out your opinion on how this presentation lays out to what we're trying to accomplish since 2008?
I mean, this is, as Siavash said, this is going to be a tool, and I think it's going to be a tool that could be used by all the communities that are or feed into either one of these, and which is probably a vast majority of those that are in the Little Cal watershed. And I think it's a tool that the Drainage Board can use in Crown Point. I think it's individual communities can use, and I think it's our ability to use this as well to evaluate applications. And but he pointed out, not necessarily just because there's not a regional impact doesn't mean there's not a local impact that may be beneficial to that community that's applying for it.
So can it be used for that particular purpose, or is it only going to be something that can be utilized on a regional perspective?
I think it's regional, but I think that you could see based on the cross sections, I would imagine, see about that. Old Peggy, you guys did the report that you could utilize it in some places where the impacts are. And even when we did that railroad crossing and Third Street Bridge, there was, if you saw, there was an impact negatively just shortly downstream, but by the time it went, made it all the way down, it dissipated to negligible, if that was how I read it.
Right. Yeah, Chairman Baker, for answering that question, I think it's possible if you have detailed in that stream. So some of these models, impacts or projects are happening into smaller streams that are not part of this integrated model. However, the flow values and for the watershed and stuff like that could be used for that one. Particularly, we want to know if, you know, along the small tributary, there's other modeling that's happening. Our objective was to see, okay, is that changing something in the main stems, those major streams. Peggy, do you have anything to add there?
It depends on the size of it. Like you say, if it doesn't hit one of those streams, then it's kind of, you're going to, you need to just do the smaller detailed study to, that's where you're going to see your impacts.
I mean, because it's very cool in how you had it all done. And with those sub basins, I thought that there might be an opportunity if there was some way to kind of drill down. I mean, I understand it's a big picture scenario and it's really for big projects, but it's also to, you know, help the local communities have another tool in their quiver from the standpoint, or it should be an arrow in the quiver to be able to handle some localized issues, even though it doesn't have a huge impact on the system-wide situation. That's all.
Certainly. I understand.
And then one other question I had was, as these projects are submitted and you're utilizing the model, what kind of an executive summary would come back to somebody like us associated with some applications that would come in? So that would be something that I'd be interested in as well, because does negligible in some of the examples, is that a benefit? Is it just meaning it's not creating problems? So how might we able to come up with a process to be able to have some kind of feedback based on the model that these particular applications and the applicants have made, you know, that we can check off and read what it does to this model or what kind of information we have off that model?
Certainly, and this would be, I think, the Excel sheet for each one of those projects. There would be Excel sheet like this, which where the person brings the cross sections in, and that's too much detail, but then summary would be in the form of this table that you see on the right. So it has reach by reach and what elevations, for instance, in this project, you can see some numbers for every reach. And also that yellow portion, you see that it's basically summarizing that information. That's something that the evaluator would look at. That table is generated automatically when the project is put in, but then somebody would write down those few words and hopefully my bucket for you to know if the project has impact. But that's what we are trying to do, is summarize it into this in a word executive summary would be that shaded yellow as far as results, and that shaded gray in terms of what the project is and the details.
And it relates to the platform for the municipalities. Is this something that's on the web? Is this something that you're going to send out? And how is that updated so everybody's singing from the same song sheet?
Yeah, that's something we need to work with. You know, it was at least when we generated this, was meant to be the results could be summarized in the Excel sheet, and it could be printed to a PDF. And then if that's commission wants to put that on the web or something, that's your thing. Piggy?
I was just going to say, this is set up so that negligible is determined by already preset differences. So it's not like somebody could go, well, I think negligible is a foot of difference.
You worked in Lake County before, huh? Can you go two slides up?
Sure. I'm sorry.
Forget the buckets. Projects.
Down or up? This one?
Keep going one more. Good question. You've got a list of impacts of other proposed projects.
Yes. I'm sorry. Here, this one.
That's the one. And then you've got the X's, which means
those are location of the projects.
Not going to do anything to help the situation.
It makes it worse.
The X's there are saying that it's just, you know, a negligible impact on those one. Each one of them also is like that spreadsheet.
That first one you got a checkbox by.
Yeah, this one, yes.
What's the basis of that? Because I'm looking at your notes there.
Increased the railroad by Harrison Street on Turkey Creek.
Right.
Gave it half again as much opening, and it had some reduction upstream of the railroad, you know, 0.3 feet, so it's not that much, but it was a reduction.
In a big rain event, what you're saying is the water is going to move faster through there.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And it didn't have significant detrimental downstream. It didn't increase. I was surprised it didn't increase flow more.
Yeah, and I was going to say that these in the report, of course, these are full spreadsheet PDF of those results. I just wanted for the presentation purposes just summarize them, but they're similar to the other ones. There's a table with how much per each reach.
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple questions too.
Yes, sir.
LeVon, did you have something? Do you have a question too?
I did. One of my questions was, I think Peggy sort of touched on it a little bit, and so did Sivash. So you talked about the tributaries you didn't necessarily take under consideration, but is besides like the streams and the tributaries, is there anything else, gauge data, more gauges? Is there anything else that can make this data more granular, make the results more granular, increase the certainty?
Thank you for the question. I know Peggy gonna give a better dance than I would, but I would say that when we look at the big picture, a large project, we have advantage of stream gauges, as you pointed out, that we can calibrate the model to. When it comes to smaller tributary streams, unless there's a gauge there, really we are at the dark in a way. We have, usually we try to use the high water marks along the stream. If there was a flooding, that was something to calibrate the model. But that's one of the things, is that the accuracy of this modeling becomes smaller and smaller because you have gauges. The more gauges, the more you have, the more accurate. Piggy?
I was just thinking more along the lines of each of those sub-basins can be more a more detailed for that sub-basin could be done and then plugged in and then still make sure it doesn't throw off calibration, which would then give some trust in the use of that basin.
Good point. In other words, we have the model that we have right now has flow values generated at the end of each one of those watersheds, at the outlet of each watershed. That number could be used to, if we said calibrate or to validate other models that are done by a person who's doing the modeling, saying that, okay, I'm going to discharge now, I'm going to match that discharge to so that we have the same hydrograph more or less. And then that would be more accurate in that sense. But we are not necessarily right now, I think it was not the feasibility of modeling every little stream may be not very feasible.
The other question I had, just one more, and we sort of touched on it, but is there a way that, I know you said that this is you put the data goes in and then the yellow is sort of outcome data or output data based on the inputs, but is there a way to customize like the like a query or a configuration some sort that where you almost got like a KPI or a key performance indicator, so that we all look at this data and we all say, whether it's across municipalities or Little Cal, we all say the interpretation of this information means this, and so maybe we're looking at a dashboard, right? And the dashboard basically says, based on the information that was put in for a cross section of data at a certain location, that the inputs that were put in, we all interpreted to essentially mean this. And so now we all understand that the indicator associated with that is that it's a green check mark over the bucket, and it was based on these conditional inputs that were put in. And in this particular set of output data, is there a way that this program can do that?
That's a very good question. Peggy, do you have an explanation that I have?
I mean, there's various ways we could pull out whatever is important. I'm thinking, one project, one thing may be more important to know than another one. And I mean, we can pull out all sorts of information, like what's the extent of this decrease, what's the extent of this increase, even from each of those reaches, if it's needed in more detail, a sub-reach.
My assumption question would line is that, each project stands on its own. So since they're all going to be kind of different, it's all going to be really contingent upon what we're going to look for in those particular projects, as opposed to having something that's just a template for each particular thing. So I think we should have some kind of consistency as far as the reporting mechanism from an executive summary perspective as we review those applications. But we're back to each project stands on its own. And
yes.
We'll look for those particular items to do, because my understanding of how this was looked at in the big picture was that as new projects happen, is it going to have an impact 2-3 communities down the way, and then on the system as a whole, and how much volume, what can we do if we took this bridge out, what would happen, those types of things, so we were able to utilize its impact on the system as a whole, not just in that particular community.
Yeah, and then we would judge the merit of the application based on that.
Yes.
Criteria, correct. Yeah.
Yes, and I was going to add that, as you indicated, that the modeling when it's done and put in that spreadsheet, it automatically does the subtraction or comparison, cross section by cross section, which is one of the tabs. So if somebody wants to drill into it, the next tab summarizes that into this reach by reach, so that you can see. And as Peggy pointed out, we already have. And we'll put it in the report that what was the criteria when we say negligible, what does it mean? Is it 0.1 foot difference or something? So that is there, but that also is automatically determined negligible. So it's a consistent criteria, which will be transparent in what it is that considered. Beyond that, and as it's a case-by-case basis for you to see the consequences. For instance, if you have a 0.2 inch, 1 inch of increase downstream for a small reach, but very positive upstream. You're gonna say, well, this reach doesn't have any structures. There's nothing in here. It's flow is in channel. So I think this, we don't call it negative. It's just, okay, there's some consequence, but it's not consequential. Versus the other project, maybe in a very strategic place, you have something you don't want to have even an inch of increase in the flooding. And so that's where you look at it and say, well, even if it's, still more measurable and consequential, So we're not going to, you know, allow this project, something like that. So it's case by case in terms of judgment. There's a judgment at the end that has to come, but we can provide the data consistently for you to make that judgment.
Vince, helps?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Any other questions?
A couple quick ones, I think. Talking off your additional consideration slide at the end.
Yes.
Do you guys have any insight or thoughts based on your review of this model? And thank you, by the way, this is very comprehensive, helpful to us. About whether there are projects that might have regional benefit but negative, I'm sorry, local benefit but negative regional consequences. Back on the slide that Commissioner Wojcielinski has looking at with all the yellow buckets, it looks like everything we do to Lake George is negative on the system. So I don't know if that has a local benefit, but did you guys see any things where you thought, oh, this might have local benefit but regional downsides, out of curiosity?
Peggy?
I don't remember seeing anything that really jumped out to me. I was focused on these things, so didn't look too in depth at additional ideas, but nothing jumped out. I think I was mostly surprised at how consistent the system is and how.
Ooh, it, hey, can you say that part again?
How consistent the system is in that. You have to do a lot in one area to change much in another area.
And I want to add something to this, Peggy, that one observation that we had, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but like, for instance, the interaction between Deep River and Little Cal, you know, the Deep River seems to be controlling the flow and everything. So it really, if we are looking for impact downstream of the confluence, no matter what we do in the Little Cal, that's not going to change the picture down so far as the Deep River is high there, because it puts a backwater into this. So the we see how consequential the Deep River is in the whole system coming in. And that goes back, if I may, again, into the impacts on that one, probably large impacts downstream at the confluence there. And so there goes the value of this flood storage and other features there. Peggy, is that accurate?
Did this work that you did it include from the confluence to Burns Ditch?
Yes, it
went all the way down to Lake Michigan. Now there's things with what elevation to use Lake Michigan to start at and its impact, but it impacts through Burns. So the Burns Ditch part is kind of more of a placeholder.
Right, I agree.
Make a lot of decisions there, but
let's face it, the water all goes to Lake Michigan, regardless of what we say or what people in elected office say.
Yeah, but it does go all the way through there. And I think once we have, Chairman, when we have the Little Cal, in that we are developing a 2D model of that as part of the work we're doing for commission, that would be done extensive modeling of the entire thing, all hard ditch, coming into the watershed coming in, and the Little Cal itself would be developed, and so that would be all connected together. So you have all these major streams going to the confluence, and hopefully be able to look at the impacts when you see it.
Thank you. I have one final question too on the same slide. Periodic updates. Do you guys have a recommendation on how often those updates need to occur, or if it's event driven?
Good question. We have similar project in Columbus, Indiana, and that really haven't seen more than every 2 years or 3 years of update if necessary. It depends. If you have a couple of projects that are substantial, it may need that type of a data. Another thing I was going to say, rainfall data that we used for this project for the 100-year tenure, for the 2008-2019 obviously was observed rainfall. But for 100 year and 10 years based on NOAA estimates. NOAA is in the process of updating their data. In 2025 or 2026, we're going to receive updated rainfall information for entire Indiana, including your watershed. And when that happens, a lot of ordinances, standards need to change, and also input to our modeling may change. So we may need to revisit that again in that sense, in the updates. But I consider the updates not to be very substantial if you can keep it going for a while. And our situation right now is that thankfully we have budget left in our project that we could be of help as this go on for now.
Divash, I'm sorry, you said that NOAA was updating all of its system data. When is that, 25 or 26?
Yeah, it's some part of the Indiana is 25, some part 26. But it's in 25 until 26, they're going to update all the rainfall data. And that would include what we call Atlas 14 data, which has rainfall for depth for and intensity for various durations and return intervals. But they supposedly also want to have climate projections models. So in other words, not that you give what is the rainfall based on history, but also this is what we expect within the next 20, 30 years, which
outstanding. Outstanding. Yeah. All right, gentlemen, we've got some stuff left to do. Is there any other questions for this on this item? Once, twice. Thank you very much, folks. That was outstanding. And we'll obviously be in constant contact as this thing progresses. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
All right, moving right along, folks. Next up is other issues, new business.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to act on Resolution 2024-07 and an interlocal agreement with the town of Griffith for the Wood Street Stormwater Lift Station Improvements Watershed Project in an amount not to exceed $825,000. Subject to final draft and approval by attorney, executive director, and chairman.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Mr. Repe.
Just briefly, this storm station services about 475 acres of land. They were looking to put a backup generation there and also looking to switch from one of them being a diesel-powered pump station or pump to a electric. So. That's some of the high points of this application.
Any questions for Mr. Repe with regards to this particular line item?
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Are we the nature of this particular application, is it to forecast or in the future to do generators in general, across pump stations in general, or what? Is the nature of us to do generators in general, replacement of generators in general for municipalities? Or?
I mean, the application calls for a generator, just very similar to, so does the raker that we spoke about earlier, but it's really case-by-case basis as far as what communities are asking for. Some communities do not have backup generators at their pump stations. I can tell you Hammond, Munster, well, we have one on ours, on Burr, but Griffith has gone to that level of going for backup generators at their stations. Some communities don't have backup generators at their stations. I guess it's just
case by case.
Based on the municipality, what they're asking for.
Do we have, aside from the one at Bird North, do we have one anywhere else?
We do not, no. The only backup generator that we have is at Bird North.
What about the pump station for HSD?
Hammond Sanitary?
Yeah.
Hammond Sanitary and Munster, which are the same, put forth an operation that have all backup generators at all their stations. That was after the 2008 flood. They entered into that, and now they all have.
So this isn't the only backup generator.
Yeah, I'm not
We have them on our pump stations. Should have them on all our pump stations.
Some of them don't even run.
Some don't even run, though. They're just there because they're cool.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else? No? Any other questions on this? Got a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
Yes.
Yes. Anthony Brodnick? Yes. Derek Gibbons? Yes. Dave Castellanos?
Yes.
Ron Ware?
Yes.
Robert
Ochi?
Yes.
Levon
Whitaker?
Yes.
William Baker?
Yes. Moving right along. Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to act on Resolution 2024-08, an interlocal agreement with the town of Griffith for the Wood Street Storm Sewer Improvement Watershed Project in the amount not to exceed $690,000, subject to final draft and approval by attorney, executive director, and chairman.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second, Mr. Repay.
The high point is this is going to install a 36-inch storm sewer, approximately 1,400 feet to an area that currently doesn't have storm sewers, and provides a second point of discharge for this area in this Holsack Wood Main Street area. It's a relatively flat area that it has 7,000 vehicles roughly that pass through Main and Wood on a daily basis. So, and I believe this is a part of a larger project that the town is undertaking to fix that entire vehicle or traffic area.
Any questions for Mr. Repay on this application?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. In this particular area, 7,000 vehicles roughly a day, you say?
Yeah.
Pass through. Is
not going to do the traffic count, but that's what their application is.
And is this an unincorporated area?
No. This is within Main, like I think Main Street still in Griffith. So, yeah, Main Street and North.
Main Street and North.
So it's, let's see if I can pick out the intersection here. Yes, sir. Feel free.
Great.
Oh, well, there you go, Jake. Go ahead. Speak to it.
Am I loud enough here?
Sure. Can you step up to the microphone and state your name and address? Seen all of this.
Yep. Jake Damrell with Public Permit and Site of Engineering on behalf of the town of Griffith. This project specifically for the Wood Street Storm Sewer Project begins at the intersection of Wood and Main Street in southern end and heads north approximately 1,400 feet. It provides an outlet for Main Street, which currently doesn't have a stormwater outlet. That's the purpose of the project, as well as improvements to the overall neighborhood along the Wood Street corridor, all of which feeds to the project you just referenced prior. Part of the large residential area that relies on the lift station for its drainage.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I got one question.
Yes, sir. Oh, by the way, Mrs. Lambert, excuse me, Dave, could you please make a note that Dave Castellanos didn't get to the meeting during the presentation of Burke? Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to know that once this project is completed, is there any kind of economic benefit it's going to be for that area, like building development?
I would forecast that likely to be the case. If you've driven down Main Street from Colfax to the west, you'll notice it's in quite a bit of disrepair. A lot of that's due to the fact that there is no drainage. Mr. Repay alluded to another project that the town is working on. It is community crossings, road reconstruction of Main Street. They're doing that in partnership with the state of Indiana. Once Main Street's reconstructed, utilizing the outlet that's provided through this Wood Street project, I think you will see some attention being paid to Main Street and some potential growth and redevelopment.
Okay, very good. We need economic development. Thank you.
Any other questions? Either or not, Mrs. Lambert, we have a motion and a second.
Yes.
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 Yes. All right, moving right along.
So, Chairman, I would like to make a motion to approve a proposal with Superior Engineering for engineering services to upgrade the controls at Marshalltown Pump Station in the amount not to exceed $101,400 pending legal review.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Repay.
This just simply upgrades what I call the motherboard of PLC for Marshalltown Pump Station. Currently, it is in somewhat failure. We have to do it by hand sometimes, which means we have to run the pumps by hand on occasion when that fails. And this will replace that so that they can all run like they're supposed to.
Question for Mr. Repay on this one.
Just a quick comment. I made a comment earlier. I think I kind of misread the proposal. I'm silent on it.
Okay.
I think it's good.
Then I rescind my good catch.
So just for clarification, this particular proposal is similar to an upgrade already from Grant West, sort of a boilerplate reflecting the design.
Yeah. We're currently upgrading Grant West for North and Grant East. and those should be done. They should have been done, although some's on back order. They will be complete in mid-July. This will then complete Marshalltown, which besides Broadway, Ironwood would be the only two, I believe, that I can remember, because we rebuilt First South when we took it over from GSD. So that's it. And Grant West is a takeover as well. So yeah, we had no maintenance records on
it. And this is our way of sort of addressing obsolescence before it happens with parks and all those other kind of things.
Well, unfortunately, I have to admit, in this one, obsolescence got us, and we probably should have replaced it sooner, but we'll get it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Anything else on this one? We have a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
Yes.
Tom
Bezzecchi. Yes.
Anthony Brodman.
Yes.
Derek Simmons.
Yes.
Dick
yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert Lucci.
Yes.
Yes.
William
Baker.
Yes. All right, moving right along. Next up, my favorite part, statements to the board from the floor. If you'd like to help us make sure we're doing the right thing and that 2008 doesn't happen again in our lifetime, please come up, state your name and address at the podium. Come on, y'all, you came out. Going once, going twice. Closing that, bring it back up to the floor. Mr. Ware, do you think for the greater good?
I just want to thank Christopher Berg and the representatives for the very informative and much long overdue engineering study for the portion of the watershed that is so critical. And just thank everyone for taking the time to come to the meeting and wish everyone a happy fourth.
Thanks, Mr. Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Same thing as Commissioner Ware stated. Thank you, everyone, for coming out. And this is, I would say, the this Deep River Watershed Modeling and Project Evaluation Tool that Christopher Burch presented and Sivash and Peggy did on behalf. It's probably one of the best presentations I think I've seen. The Audubon did a great presentation. I think that they can interpret their data a little bit more clear. It's probably one of the better presentations as well. I think, we're sort of moving in the direction of getting better applications, watershed applications. I think we've gotten better at the data and our requirements and criteria that we sort of use. But I think we still have a lot of subjectivity that we use because we don't have this type of presentation data that Chris took from Bert. And I think our goal, although look at every application on a case-by-case basis, is to remove as much emotional and subjectivity out of the applications as possible and to have more objective data so that we can get more granular data that the applicants are using so that maybe they don't present what they're going to present based on emotional recommendation, but they may see a different need that this type of data actually points out so that we can make a better and informed decision and we can have a stronger watershed. So I see us going in that direction, especially in light of the 25-26 NOAA information that CBOT Peggy shared with us. So happy Juneteenth and July 4th to everyone. Be safe, and that's about all, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Wyszlinski.
Nothing to add.
Mr. Gazdecki.
I'd like to thank Christopher Berg and the audience that we have. Thank you for your time. Thanks for coming out. And have a safe and happy 4th of July.
Mr. Broadnax.
Good to be home, and I echo Mr. Ware's comments as well. Thanks to everyone for coming out. Thanks for Christopher Berg for that super informative study. And sort of agreement, so to speak, with Commissioner Whitaker. I do think that data is important. Obviously, it's not static, so we kind of have to do the best we can with judging each project on its merit at the time. And timing sometimes matters as well. So it's always moving. And so a really good study, and it's going to help us to move this thing forward. Nothing further.
Thank you. Mr. Nimitz.
I have nothing to add.
Mr. Oche.
I have nothing to add.
Mr. Castellanos.
Thank you. First of all, I want to say it's great to see Commissioner Brodnick's home again. There's certainly a conflict that's going on in the hospital. It's good to see you. Glad that you're here. It's safe. Second, I also want to leave one that I think our executive director, Dan, we paid for doing a fantastic job. We had a tour of the Little Cayman Rivershed with about an overflow crowd of people who were born and raised in this area and never had the opportunity to see what the watershed or what it was all about. And they were surprised to see the eagle's nest and a lot of love in the animals that went through it. And they're also asking for us to do another tour. So it's going to be something great. So Dan, on behalf of people of Gary and in East Chicago that I talked to in Hammond, they thank you very much. Thank you. And that's just about it. Thank you.
Mr. Wakeland.
Nothing
to add. Mrs. Lambert, is this month it? No. All right. So can so much take a motion to adjourn with our next meeting being Wednesday, the 17th of July. Please check the website as far as location. You can see sometimes things happen.
So moved.
There's a motion in a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, everybody. Be safe.
Thank you.